Hello, everyone. This is Mike Knezovich, and welcome to the latest edition of Tune Up with Mike and Monty, Brain Science Step by Step. We're here in Chicago with Dr. Monty Pavaluri, and it's a beautiful morning. How are you today, Doctor?
I'm doing great, Mike, and it's great to be able to do something meaningful today.
Well, let's hope so. We're going to talk about the neuroscience of mindfulness meditation today. Now, that's kind of a mouthful, but I know if you're like me and you read a lot and you read a lot of different kinds of media, I happen to be really curious about this because I keep hearing about mindfulness and the multitude of benefits that practicing mindfulness can bring, and also the mindfulness and meditation, and are they the same things? And really, I'm just full of questions. I mean, even the idea that I've read somewhere that practicing mindfulness or meditation can actually sort of change your brain, like physiologically. So I've got a million questions, but the first one is this legit? I mean, is there real science behind this?
I think that the science is burgeoning as we speak. Mindfulness is definitely legitimate because there are innumerable number of brain studies now that are published that are here to validate changes in the brain mechanisms in different states of meditation and in experienced meditators as well as novice meditators and cross-sectionally, like, you know, here and now when they're meditating, what's going on versus following them up over a long period of time. So there is a lot of evidence on mindfulness that's available. I think that mindfulness is absolutely a brilliant idea because it's practiced to reduce stress, promote mental health, physical health, and also improve cognitive performance. And it's really, Mike, very easy. Remember, it's a non-judgmental attention to the present moment-to-moment experience. All right?
Yeah. Okay. So I kind of get it, you know, sort of at a high level and conceptually, but I'm somebody, I don't meditate. I don't think I practice mindfulness right now. What would be a good first step? What would be a good example of what would you tell me to do as to start?
Okay. Well, one thing that I've been asking also young children and also parents these days is, that is adults, and of course practicing myself, is sitting for at least 10 minutes, non-judgmentally focusing on what's going on around us. You know, looking at everything around you, gaining attentional control. It's almost like increased focus. And if you like, you can breathe in and breathe out. And like normal person, like, but pay attention to your breathing for 10 minutes every day. 10 minutes, just sit in one place and focus on your breathing and notice it. Uh-huh. Focus your attention on your own breathing, as simple as that. And as you do it, there is no judgment, and hopefully you are regulated in your emotion and you're not like revved up as you start to focus and do something non-judgmental and simple. Mm-hmm. And slowly there is a self-awareness that develops in the process. Therefore, mindfulness meditation involves attentional control, emotion regulation that's automatic, and self-awareness. And eventually these components of non-judgmental increased focus would lead to some level of self-regulation.
Okay. All right. So if I start there, here's my first question is, like, my mind, I wrestle to focus sometimes because I'm thinking of 100 things at the same time. But that's not a failure when you sit down to try this, right?
I mean,
the idea is to gradually just keep trying.
Keep trying, or not even try. Just kind of like practice a 10-minute
just keep doing that.
On focusing on your breathing.
Okay.
So I know it's an effortful act to begin with. You know, you got to sit down, you know, you got to find a time, hopefully the same time or whenever you can find a time for those 10 minutes or maybe even 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that effort to kind of pull yourself together will reduce, and your mind wandering will reduce with time as you become more practiced in this focusing.
Okay.
And then in advanced stage, actually, you don't need any effort and you look forward to that wonderful 10 minutes that's just for you. That's you grab that experience. And therefore, you know, like you know, after this effortless, kind of nice, self-preserving, mindful, non-judgmental, focused time that you give for yourself will result in some enlightenment and some lightheartedness and, you know, dynamic inside feeling that you're more prepared to kind of more prepared to the next steps, and your mind is cleared up. It's almost like this, Mike. Say, take a glass of water, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you put sand in it, and you sort of wiggle the water. So how is it? Like, the sand is all over the water, right?
Right.
I mean, it's just kind of foggy and, you know, like. So with time, all that sand settles down and your water is so clear and you can kind of see through it.
That's a great.
And there's more clarity. So almost like you are now, you and I are like with the glass with a lot of sand in it, you know. But when you sit down, it becomes more clear, and then you're ready for the next best thing to do.
I like that image and that concept because, I don't know, it's powerful. So now we're talking about neuroscience here. So in some of these changes, I wonder if you could, you know, for lay people like myself, what kinds of things change? I mean, we're talking about gray matter, white matter, all that stuff. But I mean, so if I do this consistently enough,
yeah,
and long enough, and,
right,
and with, you know, sincere intent, how would my brain change?
Okay. Well, you said that, first of all, gray matter, white matter.
Yeah, I don't know the difference,
that,
to be
so
honest.
So let me just briefly, you know, tell you. The gray matter, that is the outer layer of the brain, is the structural, you know, that shows structural changes with mindfulness is really interesting to know.
Mm.
So there is increased cortical thickness. Almost like the cap of the brain, that the brain, the gray matter, changes are noted. Basically, altered in consistency in all the meditators, and if they are advanced in their process of meditation, like for thousands of hours of meditation, like in monks, etc., there are like at least 8 regions that show changes.
Wow.
That's like Fox documented it, and his colleagues documented it in 2014, where there is a increased thickness of frontopolar cortex, that's in the front of the brain. And then there is also a mid-cingulate, that's a middle manager between the frontal cortex and the bottom areas of the brain, called anterior cingulate, that we keep talking, and mid-cingulate, as well as the evaluative brain called orbitofrontal cortex. They all change in thickness, along with the memory area called hippocampus.
So the physical thickness, in essence, kind of grows?
The gray area, the density of the gray area increases.
Okay.
Yeah? And also the corpus callosum, which is like a ribbon in the middle of the brain that connects the two hemispheres, also changes. And also the superior longitudinal fasciculus, which is like a ribbon on the top of the brain, like a long kind of bundle that pulls things together and transmits messages, that also becomes thicker. And also the insula and sensory parts of the brain that bring body awareness, that's in, they also change. So there are many areas, the thinking parts of the brain, the middle manager, the memory area, the sensory areas, and also the kind of areas that kind of pull the brain together across the two hemispheres. They all increase in thickness and density in the gray matter for better functioning in those who meditate. So now we talked about the gray matter, then comes the white matter, and white matter is interesting. It's like the, you know, Mike, there are like white tubes across the brain. Like imagine little tubes between different parts of the brain,
mm-hmm.
okay? So there is that white matter connectivity or connections in between all these gray areas of the brain that carry the neuronal impulses, okay? So imagine water molecules are moving in these neurons that are measured to understand the integrity of these white matter tubes.
Okay.
So these white matter tubes that kind of measure the water's integrity, its integrity through white matter, through water movement, it's called the diffusion tensor imaging. But I don't want to go too much into detail.
Mm-hmm.
But this the functional connectivity is determined across many of these gray regions as well through another mechanism called functional connectivity analysis. And what happens is, what happened in the studies is that they showed increased white matter integrity in the resting state networks in general in the brain,
so the,
in these meditators. And also there is increased functional connectivity as well among these regions of the resting state and the prefrontal cortex connectivity. So there's a lot of, you know, stability that's being obtained with practice.
So in simple terms, the communication or connectivity between different functional areas of the brain is improved.
Yeah, especially those in the those networks of the resting state areas, like frontal cortex, and then dorsal anterior cingulate and posterior cingulate, like the front, you know, the front part of the brain, the back part of the brain, middle part of the brain, all of those that kind of are connected at rest, and they kind of stay calm, and and when you're not active and doing anything, they just stay put, you know, and well connected, and they are pulled into action and with cognitive control regions nicely when you're supposed to work and think. Okay, so there is also increased cognitive control over the resting state network, and they are pulled in and pulled out in a very more easy functional manner without being jerky in their function, in simple terms, if I have to tell you.
Yeah, and so, and one other thing, just resting state.
Okay.
What does that, I think I know what that means, but you mean I'm...
When you're not
just
like,
sitting.
Yeah, we're always thinking something or the other, right? I mean,
right.
The real resting state is attained perhaps when you're not doing anything active, engaged in an active act, and your brain is at rest.
Okay.
And so there are certain areas of the brain that are active in keeping the brain in the resting state.
Okay.
And that's the, you know, medial prefrontal cortex, you know, the cortex in the medial side of the front of the brain, and also the one at the back called posterior cingulate, and also the middle manager called dorsal anterior cingulate. They're all kind of involved in this resting state in mindfulness, especially, that remain well connected.
Okay.
And they also work. And you know what? To add value, I want to say one more thing.
Uh-huh.
Hassenkamp and others have published in 2012 where they also looked at all these patterns and went on to further say that the people who are anxious seem to engage also with meditation practice, the ventromedial or lower medial part of the brain in the front is well connected to the resting state, and, you know, therefore offer better control on anxiety. So there's a greater access to the internal states due to this connectivity, and they're able to maintain tranquility a bit better.
And address their anxiety.
Yeah, exactly. So there are not only brain changes, but there are behavioral changes associated with this mindfulness practice that has been shown.
Well, that's fantastic, really. I mean, I'm going to go back to sort of, there's mindfulness, there's meditation, there's TM, you know, transcendental meditation, Zen. There's a lot of terms that get thrown around. I think sort of
right,
kind of not carefully
right,
enough,
right,
and
right.
I don't know the difference between them or what the relationship right, between
right.
them are.
I know mindfulness practices, were included, and actually many of the studies studied by or included in meta-analysis by several researchers, Vipassana meditation, Dzogchen and Zen meditation, mindfulness-based approaches such as integrative body-mind training called IBMT, and then the mindfulness-based stress reduction called MBSR. All of these have elements that are adopting the mindfulness practices from Buddhist traditions, and they're all about non-judgmental awareness through and moment-to-moment increasing the focus and staying put. And these techniques have something in common, and no matter which technique you use, you know, there are bound to be similar changes that we've been discussing. And in fact, there were studies, at least 10 studies, and that included 91 subjects, that was published by, again, the Hassan Camp in 2012 and in 2011 as well, where during the meditation, they're also Spur Duty in 2012 have done this meta-analysis with the 10 studies and 91 subjects, by the way. Several of these meta-analyses resulted in three regions being active, that is the caudate and putamen, that is like the area that is involved in concentration at the base level that's active. That is explained as not engaging in unnecessary things. You know, it's almost like attentional disengaging from irrelevant information. And also the area called parahippocampus is also engaged, and active, because it stops from mind wandering, possibly by gaining emotional control. And then there is also medial part of the front of the brain that increases self-awareness, you know. So there is increased self-awareness, disengaging from attention, and stopping the mind wandering. All of these are happening in the brain across all these various subjects and various methods of mindfulness.
So you shouldn't get hung up on the method so much as doing one or the other of them. They all have some benefit, and they all address the same kinds of thing.
I'd say that.
Yeah.
I'd probably say that, but, you know, I'm just more telling that the research is not like pure,
but
like there is a gestalt of what is to be expected.
Okay.
And what is interesting, Mike, is experienced versus novice people. In the experienced mindfulness-based practice, there is prefrontal cortex that's kind of calmer and it's not so active. And it's like the amygdala, or not even amygdala, the insula that is really more active. So it's almost like if the amygdala is active, then they transmit the messages to prefrontal cortex in the process, of course. And then there is the insula that is active along with sensory cortex. So it is aware of the one person is a person who's very experienced and advanced is aware of the bodily experiences, and they're aware of what's going on with themselves without being necessarily aroused, you know, and they don't have to put a lot of effort into thinking and, you know, pulling themselves together and all that. It is you and I who start meditation, perhaps, then we might be really using more of prefrontal cortex to kind of like a horse's reining the chariot, you know, and say, hey, come on now, you fall into place, okay,
yeah.
You know, to the rest of the brain, you know, whereas the monks don't have to do it. You know?
I got it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more like, it's practice. I mean, it's sort of like you work at it, but it would take more conscious effort to stop your brain from wandering. You used a term before, I forget, you've used the term non-judgmental awareness, or what is that? I mean, I think, it's one of these things where I think I have a sense of what that means, but whereas you're experiencing something and you're not going, it's good or bad, you're just experiencing it. Is that what you're talking
about?
Yeah,
I mean, you're not like saying, oh, this is bad thought, this is good thought.
You're just having the thought.
Yeah. I mean, oh, they're being critical. Or look at their face. You know, they're not smiling at me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at me. I'm in my mirror, you know, if there's a mirror. I mean, like, oh, you know, I'm not happy. Or what about, you know, this morning my teacher wasn't really kind to me.
Mm-hmm.
Or usually we're all negative. You know, we can kind of default towards negative. But
yeah.
I think eventually one would come to think hopefully positive thoughts. But I think that, you know, not judging, you know, even like it's basically reducing excitability. Even
mm-hmm.
the positive, oh my God, my birthday is coming.
Uh-huh.
What is my husband going to get
uh-huh.
me?
It's just turning down the volume.
My husband would give me anything, but yeah. I'm just saying.
Well.
You would really want to, I mean, you're not always like thinking, you know, what somebody is going to, you know, be praising of you for something you've done. Or, I mean, you're not really like calculating anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're always calculating.
Yeah. Yeah,
sizing up things and analyzing. I mean, analyzing sometimes as a psychiatrist, I feel is fine as far as you don't judge. But if you can understand the difference,
you have
to understand it, but you're not judging it.
Right.
You know, analysis comes kind of automatic, like second nature to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, are you judging? You know, what judgment? I personally think, though, my judgment becomes less and less if you understand and empathize and know what's going on, and that kindness also
mm-hmm.
increases with you calming down with this sort of practice, I think.
Yeah.
And personally, I think though mindfulness is great, but I also think that problem solving and thinking positive, keeping things simple, and emotionally processing things, all of them are really important. You know, mindfulness is not the only answer in my opinion.
That's okay.
But it is like an important part. And but, you know, people swear who do mindfulness that once you do it, like that would be it. But I think that the rest of the qualities of emotion processing and non-judgmental attitude are good byproducts of something like that, perhaps.
Yeah, it seems to me that this is just a good basis and it might improve those things, but it's not a replacement or it's not a be-all and end-all.
I think so, Mike. I mean, you know what? I have my theory about this. You know, the stress is the most central thing that we all don't want to be facing, right? I mean, anger, anxiety, fear, depression, everything is arising from stress, right?
Mm-hmm.
And stress, if it's too severe, or we as people are handling the emotions in a closed manner, perhaps,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
then we end up not being able to process the emotions of the stressful event.
Mm-hmm.
And we have panic, depression, schizophrenia, and all these serious things might develop, especially if you're predisposed to it,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's almost like we have to learn to express our stress. A catharsis in words is important, organizing to keep them more, you know, less fragmented, but get a framework to what has happened in the past or now. And, you know, all this talking and sharing with someone else who's non-judgmental and helps you understand, lets the intensity fade with exposure and understanding and such narrative to your life and completeness and control is really very important in reducing stress. And I suppose that one can also increase self-awareness and process one's own stress if you do mindfulness, perhaps,
uh-huh.
you know, with some help.
You can kind of be that person for yourself.
Yes.
Yep.
I mean, at least, you know, if you don't have like overwhelming stress that you need extra help.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, this has been terrific. And I think I'm going to start taking 10 minutes a day and just be and see what happens.
You know what? That's what I've been doing with many people now, you know, sitting down and letting them just focus on their breathing.
Yeah.
Stay for 10 minutes still.
Yeah.
And that's time for you.
Yeah. 10 minutes is something that I think we can all figure out how to grab for ourselves. You know, it's not a too big a commitment. And,
no.
It's a great starting point.
No. I think that's a gift you can give yourself. So mindfulness is something really wonderful. It's scientific. It's proven. And it's yet to be proven a lot, even more so. But still, it's time to begin to find that peace in yourself and peace in all of us. And think positive. Keep things simple. And let's just, you know, make sure that we just get this done for ourselves.
Yeah. You know? So after you're done listening to us, go grab yourself 10 minutes, okay? Just like the doctor says. All right? That's it for this week, this session, I should say. I'll see you, and get yourself a good 10 minutes of mindfulness.
Thanks, Mike. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.